Essay with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing. I am back with my next guest, New York Times best-selling author Mackenzie Lee. And the name of the book is Winter Soldier, Cold Front. Hi, Mackenzie.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Wow, what a book. What a book. I'm holding it up to the camera. We're also on YouTube, so I just want people to see it. A rather startling cover there with the red star.
Yeah, it's a good one.
It's a good one. It is definitely a good one. Oh, this is so much fun. You have to explain exactly to my audience, because, you know, I love dual timeline books. I really do. They're always... I get such a kick out of them. And of course, you are a historian, so you have dealt with the history of two very important periods of time. And tell us about this story and about the background, because you've done a marvelous job with this book.
Oh, thank you. Well, the book is about characters in the Marvel Universe. So I did some of it myself, but a lot of the work was done by the many, many other people who have worked with these characters and written about them and done comics and films and television shows about them. And it's been great fun and a great opportunity to be part of this universe and to be creating with so many other sort of unseen collaborators.
Well, you know, explain the storyline, because for those who don't know, that it is based on the Marvel character, James Buchanan, Bucky Barnes. That's Bucky Barnes, right?
Yep, that's it.
Tell us about him, and tell us how you got involved in writing the backstories here.
So Bucky's best known for being Captain America's sidekick. He's the sort of right-hand man of Captain America all through World War II. And then later in life, they're separated, and Bucky is captured by the Russians and becomes a brainwashed sleeper agent for the USSR. So half the timeline of the book is set in World War One, or excuse me, no, the other one, World War Two, when Bucky's still sort of a young 16-year-old enthusiastic dummy who wants to be involved in the war and has no sort of understanding of what that really means, and has all these bright-eyed and bushy-tailed ideas about patriotism and heroism and what it means to be a good guy versus a bad guy. And then the other timeline is 10, 15 years later in 1954, about him when he's an agent for the USSR. He's sort of lost his memory, he's been stripped of his identity, and the two missions, the one he's working on in 1941 and the one he's working on in 1954, end up intersecting and both becoming personal to him in a way he didn't expect.
And this is rather timely, because we're talking about the Cold War with Russia, and so people who are reading this book are going to discover a lot about Russia, a lot about the Cold War, and when we talk about Winter Soldier, I mean, right now, we have a lot of Russian Winter Soldiers.
It's certainly more relevant than I expected it to be when I started working on it.
I mean, when you think about it, and at one point, I don't know, probably very falsely believed that this could never happen again, that the Russians would be out there in the middle of winter, armies of them attacking people. But back in 1954 was really a Cold War with Russia, where we were really going up against each other. Soon after that started the space race. So, as a historian, you must have had fun working on these two storylines.
Yeah, I mean, the one is set in World War II, the other is the Cold War. Like you said, I got to pull from a lot of existing references that I really, really love. When I first pitched the book to Marvel, I talked about it in terms of, like, Jean Le Carré and the sort of spy game in the cold, George Smiley type books, which I really love. I'd also just watched The Queen's Gambit when we first started talking about this, which definitely seeps into the book in a lot of ways. My most favorite book in the world is a World War II novel called Codename Verity. And so I sort of brought all these references to the table and then got to go back and do sort of the real research and some of the same research these authors and creators had done to form a foundation for their work and then apply it to mine. I mean, it's every time period I work with, it's fascinating, it's exciting. You always learn something new. No matter how much I think I know going in, it's never enough, and I always end up learning more than I could have imagined.
Now, had you ever gone to Russia? Have you been there?
No, I haven't.
Okay, because it's before this, back in the 70s, it was you really did feel the Russian mindset, and it was frightening back then. So this is fascinating how you brought this character here. The scene at the beginning of the book. Wow, that's a great scene.
Thank you. Most of the book actually doesn't really take place in Russia. It's mostly in a variety of other places. The Bucky timeline takes place in London for most of it, and then the Winter Soldier's in kind of a bunker in Siberia, but then he goes to Latvia and Svalbard and a couple of other different places around the world. The Russian connection, the Russian setting is only sort of tangential.
But the Russian mindset is definitely in place there.
It definitely is. I mean, I think it's sort of essential when you're writing the Cold War era stories.
You presented it to them, the storyline, and they went with it, or
we talked about. They signed me up to do three books about Marvel antiheroes as teenagers, the sort of fan favorite morally gray characters, and I think we had initially talked about the first one's about Loki, and we had sort of talked about that one right off the bat. But I came with Winter Soldier because he's one of my favorite Marvel characters, and they liked it and they were into it. And then from there I got to pitch the storyline and collaborate with the geniuses at Marvel, who know so much more about the comic history and what's going on in the larger world of Marvel than I do. And they were so receptive to everything I wanted to do, and then gave me sort of comic references to help me do it better.
Well, that must have been fun to work with them.
Yeah, it was wonderful. It was a wonderful process.
Well, because they have such vast resources, and they have all this backstory that they could provide you. When you finally sat down and started writing, did you really get into this feeling of understanding Bucky, particularly when he's 16, and understanding how 16-year-olds think?
Yeah, I mean, it's essential for every book you write to be able to get in the headspace of the character and to find empathy and understanding and common ground with them, or else you're not doing your job as a writer. And I mean, part of it is bringing truth and your own true lived experiences and the things you... I don't know, I try and bring myself and meet the characters where they are. And find common ground between us there.
Now, what is your background? My listeners are always interested in, since we went through November NaNoWriMo, many of my listeners finish their books in, you know, at the end of November. They started looking at them after being exhausted, you know, from the month of writing. They started, you know, looking at their books in mid-December, now into January, and I started getting emails from people who said, well, I am an author. I've written a book. I wrote 50,000 words in November. Of course, I think they very quickly realized that they've got a lot to learn. And part of it, right?
It's a long way from writing that first book, yeah. That's only the first step.
I know, and they are so excited. And now this year I didn't have it.
As they should be. It's such a tremendous accomplishment. Like, actually doing the thing and writing the book is more than 99.9% of most people do, but there's still a long slog from there.
Exactly. Now, when I first started this program, I had quite a few people who would come and say, well, I finished the book and I'm ready to send it off. Can you recommend an agent? And And then I had to sort of, you know, well, now we're talking about bursting balloons. This is in the news. But I had to burst their balloon and say, I don't think so. Calm down. You've got to, you know, look at this as a serious business of a really... It is not just the fun of writing the book, as much fun as that is, there's also the craft behind it.
Yeah, I mean, it takes a lot of time and a lot of work and a lot of study. And I mean, I think we think about writing as something you sit down and are immediately good at, or you sit down and you do and then you're done. Whereas it's a skill like learning the piano or learning an instrument or a sport. Is you don't immediately sit down and expect to be able to play Bach. You have to practice and you have to work at it and hone your craft and improve. And writing's just the exact same.
So what was it like for you when you had your first book published? How old were you then?
I was 25.
25. And so you had your first... Do you remember that day?
Very clearly.
Tell us about that day.
It's weirdly anticlimactic to have a book come out because you feel like your whole world has changed and you've done, you've accomplished this goal and you've done something that you've been working at for years and that for a lot of people has been a lifelong dream, and it's sort of like nobody notices but you. Like it's an oddly dissonant thing to have happen. I remember in the moment it felt really sort of discouraging and weird, and I kind of couldn't get over the mental hurdle of reconciling this like tremendous accomplishment with the fact that like the world did not change in accordance with the huge change that I had gone through. But I've gotten better at that, and I've gotten better at sort of placing the value in other things and finding rewards in doing the work just for the sake of doing the work.
Your book, The Gentleman's Guide to Vice and Virtue, of course, was a New York Times best-selling book. Now, is that the one that you have a movie deal for?
Yes.
Yes? So tell us about that. You're anticlimactic. Oh yes, I just happen to have a movie deal.
Well, there's nothing really to talk about with the movie. It's people occasionally, if you're very lucky, someone will pay you for the option of making the movie, and then it sits on somebody's desk for a long time, and maybe it gets made, and maybe it doesn't. So it's nice to sort of get the bump and get the boost. But it's for me. The book coming out is enough. Like if a movie happens, that would be great, and that would be a great sort of icing on the cake. But for me, my work is pretty much done with that book, and my involvement with it is pretty much done.
But it's still nice to get optioned, definitely.
Yeah, it's very nice. I don't mean to be dismissive of it. It's just I have very little to say about the movie because it's the least involved I've been with anything about that book.
Well, it's funny because one of the things that I did when I worked in Hollywood, I would be given books, you know, to write a script for. So I looked at it from the other side of, you know, I would get the book and they'd say, write the script. And, well, as you said, it might be the least writing you'll do because they really don't want usually the writer to have any input. But it is funny that when an author gets a deal like that, and you never know. Sometimes it takes a long time because, unfortunately, in Hollywood, I never worked on a script where there weren't at least five other scripts. You know, one person will do a script, and then somebody will say, "Let's improve it," and you know they'll go on like that. But eventually, you know, you never know, and it was a very good book.
Yeah, no, you truly don't ever know. But I think that with movies, there's so much out of your control, and it almost when you translate it into a different medium, it almost ceases to be the thing that it initially was to you. Like so much has to change in order for it to be a movie, and people are going to have lots of opinions and feelings about that, and often people are not going to be happy with it. And for me, I've had to sort of just like divorce myself from the whole experience, because if it doesn't happen, I can't let that affect my feelings about the book and the accomplishment. And if it does happen and people hate it, I can't let that tarnish my feelings of accomplishment. So I've sort of had to like, and you just like you too, you can't get too excited or emotionally invested in anything until it's literally on your screen.
And of course, when you're writing a book and the characters become part of you, that's when it's fun because you're in control.
Yeah, you get to make all the decisions.
And they, well, it's not that they always have to do what you want, because sometimes they do take over and sort of direct you where they want to go, right?
Right, yeah.
But that's the fun of writing, and that's the joy of writing. And I'm really so happy that you were able to join me today. I know that it's always a busy day when a book comes out, and this one is, people have been really looking forward to this. I know there's a lot of buzz about it because, first of all, you're a great writer, and people recognize that. Writing is really fine, very fine. It's really excellent. And
thank you.
You know, pure talent. I have to tell people, you know, I've been really, today I've just been on a thing with really fine writing. I've been really lucky the past few weeks. Every book I read, I have to love it, you know, to talk about it. But I get this real excitement when a book is just so beautifully written, and you've done a great job here, and it's called The Winter Soldier, Cold Front, and it is, of course, a Marvel, based on a Marvel character, and a lot of people know that. And do you have a website? Well, you do have a nice website. I know.
I looked at it.
Okay, I think maybe we dropped her, or she dropped us, or something like that. Anyway, she has a nice website. It is called Mackenzie Lee, and Mackenzie with a I at the end of Mackenzie, and her last name is Lee, and the name of the book is Winter Soldier. Really fine. Bye-bye.